All right, welcome back in. McElroy and Kubelik in the morning. It is 8 a.m., hour number two underway right here on Jocks 94.5. Going to be a hot one this weekend. GMAC, everybody better have Polar Bear Services on standby with the heat that we've got coming in.
Absolutely, and they can not just take care of your heat and air, they're going to get you taken care of with your electrical as well. Remember, Polar Bear Services, the one-stop shop, man. You make one phone call, and they get it completely taken care of. Whole home rewire, install of an electron of a full home generator, and I called Wes and those guys last Friday night, 8:30 at night. They were there, took care of it, and our house went from 78 degrees inside down to 72, 70 in the master bedroom. Thanks to him, man, I was out of luck. And then made the phone call because I remembered if there was a problem with my heating or air, I'm calling the Bear. That's 497-BEAR. That's 497-BEAR.
All right, Mike Farron is going to be on the call for Alabama Wake Forest in that Winston-Salem regional, which begins tomorrow. Mike, when you look at this Wake Forest team, there's a lot to like. 50 wins on the season, the only college baseball team with 50 wins. But as you've studied up, as you've watched, what stands out most about this Wake Forest team, what Alabama's going to have to deal with this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two things. One, you're dealing with a lineup that hits for a ton of power and does so in a real hitter-friendly ballpark. And I think the other thing is that they're one of the few teams in the country that can run out three legit starters on a weekend. You know, we've seen injuries and you know, draft status and all of that impact. So many of the rotations are around college baseball this year, the fact that they can run out Lauder and Hartle and Sullivan, you know, which are their three starters. Lauder's going to be a first-rounder this year. Hartle might be a first-rounder next year. Sullivan's been one of the most impactful transfers coming from Northwestern, is really unique. And they're deep in the bullpen. So they give you a ton of different looks. Don't score a whole lot of runs on them. I mean, their ERA was the lowest in the nation by, I think it was nearly a full run over Tennessee. So they're pretty complete. And they play solid defense, too. Like, that's the other thing, is that they're a pretty good defensive team. So there's not a whole lot of weaknesses in that Wake Forest game. That's why they're 50-10, and that's, you know, the only reason they weren't number one sooner is because they were kind of behind LSU in the polls, and LSU kept winning for most of the season. But this is as complete a team as Tennessee was a year ago, or Arkansas was the year before, and we know what happened to those two teams. So,
when you look at just the strength of Wake Forest, and obviously they can hit the cover off the ball as evidenced last week. But is there, in addition to their ability to just pound the baseball, what else do they do well that maybe people don't know a whole lot about?
Well, I mean, just on the offensive side, I mean, I think they've got a real, like, they've got their version of Jim Jarvis at the top in Tommy Hawk, who's a really dynamic leadoff man. He's a real pest, and he's a big reason why their offense goes. You know, if you can keep him off base, you're kind of halfway home. The other guy that's really the key in the middle of a lot of it, Brock Wilkins leads them in homers, but Nick Kirk's the guy who's, you know, their kind of star. Their first baseman is a sophomore who's a really impactful guy. You know, they have guys that they have that are kind of role players. Danny Corona doesn't start every day, but he's one of the best breaking ball hitters in the country, and had a multi-homer game in regionals. So they run it up and down the lineup. They're probably more power, I would say, than moving the ball around like you would see on say, like a West Coast team. But it's a very SEC-similar offense in what they run. So if they had played in the SEC this year, I don't know that they would have been 50-10, but they certainly wouldn't have been out of place at the top.
All right, Mike. So Mike Farron joining us on the Bud Light Hotline. He'll be on the call for the Winston-Salem Regional beginning tomorrow, Alabama and Wake Forest. It hasn't gone well for number one overall seeds recently, right? And I guess you could technically say historically, we haven't seen a number one overall seed win the tournament since Miami in 99. The last three have been ousted in the Super Regional. So if there is something that you look at from this Alabama team, which would be a favorable matchup for them, very problematic for Wake Forest, what would that be that the Crimson Tide's bringing to the plate or the mound this weekend?
You know, I don't know that it's anything that's like a specific matchup other than, you know, this is a really experienced Alabama team. I mean, Drew Williamson has about as many caps as just about anybody who's ever played college baseball, right? Like, he's not going to be afraid walking into Couch Ballpark to face Rhett Lauder or to face Josh Hartle. He's seen those guys for 5 years, you know, every day. You know, I think the same is with Jarvis and Seidel, and you've got guys who are just veteran hitters who aren't going to be overwhelmed by Wake Forest and staff and their stuff. And I think the other part, and this is the thing that gets overlooked, is that, like, Alabama's pitching is really good. I mean, even with the injuries that they had to hit and to Hats, like, their starters are good. Luke Holman is really good. And Holman is capable of going toe-to-toe with Lauder. They're capable of shutting down a high-power offense. They're in the top 10 in the nation in ERA, too, and they did it in the toughest league on the planet. They're not that far behind Tennessee, you know, in terms of overall ERA. So I think those are some of the things that stand out to me about Alabama. Is it's not like they have a clear advantage here so much as they're deep enough on the pitching side and they're veteran enough in the lineup that none of this is going to scare them.
How about the atmosphere? And what is the ballpark like? I looked up a little bit. It seems like a ballpark that's receptive to offensive production. I mean, is it a pitcher's park, hitter's park? How do you anticipate it playing out in that regard?
No, I think it has a reputation of being a great hitter's ballpark, which is part of what makes what Wake did this year leading the nation in ERA so impressive, right, is that they play, you know, 60% of their games in a ballpark that is conducive to high offense. So, you know, I think it's – the thing is that their pitching is good enough that it – I don't think from both of these teams, as good as their pitching is, that we're going to end up seeing slugfests, right? I don't think, you know, 13-12 games or you know, 11-8 – are going to be the finals. And now that I've said that, of course, they're all going to be high scoring, right? Like I'd put the kiss of death on it. But this is really a very, very good offensive ballpark. As far as atmosphere, I'm not sure. I haven't been there, and this is the first time Wake has been in this position. You know, this is not one of the ACC blue bloods. This is not a team that is hosting regionals and super regionals every year. The last time they went to Omaha was 1955. You know, so if you think Bama's drought is long, you know, Wake had to wait another 44 years right before that. So this is going to be interesting to see how the crowd reacts, what the atmosphere is like, and how I think there's a little bit to this about how they handle the pressure of being the number one overall seed, knowing that Bama comes in really with nothing to lose. And they're a team that has played like they have nothing to lose since the beginning of May.
We're visiting with Mike Farron. He's going to be on the call for the Wake Forest Alabama Super Regional that begins tomorrow morning. We mentioned Miami, the last number one overall seed to win the national championship in 1999. That also the last time that Alabama went to Omaha. What does this Alabama team have to be? Because I thought about it in your previous answer when I asked you about, you know, where they might have a mismatch, a big advantage. It feels kind of like that it factor that they have. No one would really know how to describe it. You can't put your finger on it. They just – things go their way. They make things happen. They find their own, you know, benefit certain times in different games. But is there a style of play that you think they need to lean on? Is it more small ball? Do they have to have power going their way? Do they have to avoid going deep into the bullpens? Like, is there a certain way that you think Alabama needs to compose itself and a strength that really has to show up in order for them to be able to advance?
Well, I mean, I think their pitching has to show up, I mean, in terms of their strengths. But I mean, that's a great strength that this team has, right? So I don't know that there's anything specific that they need to do or try to do differently. You know, we could talk about how much Wake slugs, but Bama slugs too, right? So, like, when they get traffic, they're going to have to take advantage of it. They need Pinckney to stay on this heater that he's been on for the last 2 months, where he was one of the best players in the SEC. You know, they need Jarvis to continue to be a pest at the top of the lineup. And, you know, they need to be able to take advantage, I think, of the speed that they have with Seidel. Like, there are things that they do well offensively that they just need to do well offensively, I think. And from a pitching standpoint, listen, it's going to be a difficult lineup to navigate, but it's not like they haven't played LSU tough, right, in a great lineup at LSU. Like, it's not like they haven't played tough against some of the top offenses in the country. You know, they shut down Florida early in the year, right? Like, they're close games, tight losses, right, in that series. So there's plenty of experience here, and I think maybe that's what it is that they have to lean on their experience of playing the best teams in the country as every weekend. Jason Jackson had a great line this week. I heard an interview that he was doing with Peter Burns, and he said, the thing about the SEC is that you basically have 10 super regional weekends. And it's so right on, right? Like, those 30 conference games you play are all against regional or super regional caliber opponents, even with the teams that finished out of the mix this year, the, you know, Ole Miss and Mississippi State. If you were to put them in other conferences, they, I think, would have been regional teams. That's how good the SEC was this year. So they have to lean on that experience.
What about some of the other super regionals, excuse me? Is there another matchup that really intrigues you? I mean, obviously, you know, Bama Wake to us, I think it's a great matchup. I'm fired up. I'm thrilled to be in this position as a Bama fan. I can't wait to watch it. But there are a few other supers that have me very intrigued. Is there one in particular that jumps out to you?
South Carolina, Florida, without a doubt. Because, I mean, I think Florida is about, from a talent standpoint, they're about as close to Wake as you can get. I think that's one that I think is really interesting. South Carolina did not play well down the stretch. Obviously, they haven't had Noah Hall back, one of their key starters. They've kind of moved Will Sanders into a bullpen role, which is really interesting. It looked great in regionals doing it. Eli Jones has taken over a key spot in the rotation, but they got healthy. And it seems like last week getting their second baseman Will McGillis back was a big difference maker for them offensively. And so now they go down to Florida. Florida's pitching is rolling. They can run out three really good pitchers in Sproat and Waldrop and Caglione. They have depth. They have a really deep lineup. Like, that to me is one of the more intriguing super regional matchups. And the other one I would throw at it, and it has probably less to do with the matchup because I think on paper Stanford's significantly better, but like, we got Stanford and Texas in a super regional, right? Like, those teams have been, I think it's what, three of the last 4 years that Texas has been, Stanford's been to back-to-back men's college world series. Like, the fact that they're going to square off with these two blue blood traditional programs, I think that's pretty awesome.
All right, Mike, finally for me, Greg kind of asked you about the facilities there, and we continue to hear about this pitching lab and like how forward-thinking Wake Forest is and the technology. We had John Curry on yesterday. He brought it up again. What extra insight do you have into exactly what they've constructed, what it's done, what it is that has helped Wake advance as quickly as they have?
Yeah, I mean, and I wouldn't say that it's necessarily as quickly because this pitching lab has been around for a number of years. I mean, it goes back to when Matt Hobbs, who's the Arkansas pitching coach now, was at Wake too. I mean, he was able to take advantage of this. So basically what they've done is they've created a facility that allows them to do biometric motion capturing, slow motion camera, and radar evaluation of players' pitches. And the idea is that with all of this information, you can help pitchers' deliveries be more efficient, and you can find pitches that mirror each other better or that play off each other better in an effort to try and get them to maximize their ability. So, like let's use Josh Hartle as an example, right? Hartle had a really rough freshman year. One of the things they did was they worked with him on a cutter. And because of the data that they had and because of his troubles getting the ball inside the righties, they found that that would be an easy pitch to use. So he can go four-seam fastball that has a little bit of movement into a righty, cutter, which has a lot more, and then slider, which has a ton more. And it's very difficult for hitters to pick up the difference between it because they're all coming out of basically the same release point. You know, I think with Sullivan, they were able to identify, because they're so data savvy, that he has a really unique fastball. I mean, Sullivan's a very low on slot, almost a sidearm, and he's not overpowering, but he gets crazy swings and misses at the top of the strike zone because of the angle that his fastball plays. All of that works in concert with what they do to try and get pitchers to maximize their ability. They're not the only place that has a pitching lab like that. Iowa has a really good one, and I don't know if you get West Iowa at all in regionals, but that team is loaded for bear next year on the mound, too. They have a ton of talent, and they're able to take that information. They're taking the data that they have through all of this equipment and trying to help pitchers get better quicker. And so that's what it is. But it's taken a few years for it to really take hold, I think, of Wake. And Tommy Mascaro, who's the pitching coach, does a tremendous job. And it's part of it is the biomechanics of the refining your delivery, and the other is understanding how to shape pitches that make it more difficult for hitters to hit.
Mike, great stuff, man. Really appreciate the time today. Enjoy this regional. I think it has a chance to be a good one with the best team in college baseball, yeah. And then one of the toughest, grittiest teams in college baseball as well. Appreciate you joining us today, and look forward to having you back.
Yep, guys. Take care.
Mike Farron, he calls games for ESPN, MLB Network Radio, SiriusXM. Follow him on Twitter, @Mike_Farron, Ferrin. Appreciate him taking some time to join us today. How do you feel about this one, G-Mac? Because when you look at Wake and you begin to stack them up statistically, I don't know if many teams in the country you're going to feel comfortable going into that matchup with what they have on the mound and then with the way that they bring the bats. There's not a lot that they're not good at. And but this Alabama team has just, they got something, man.
They find a way. There's a little magic in them. I'm
absolutely
with you. It's like, that's what you got to bank on. I wish that I could give you a little bit. I don't really like when we're breaking down football teams in the fall. Like, man, they got just a little magic about them. But it's kind of, there's a little something to it when it comes to Alabama and the way they've played really since Bohannon's firing. I mean, they've just been a different team. And it doesn't appear, at least at this point, I don't know about you. I mean, I don't get the sense that that's going to slow down. I don't get the sense that's going away. I am very interested, though, because, look, everyone talks about ACC versus SEC when it relates to college baseball. The ACC is excellent. They're always excellent. The SEC is always excellent. Not saying that this is going to be the sole indicator of conference supremacy. Obviously, that's not the case. But Bama's seen some really live arms, and Bama's seen some really loaded lineups. I don't get the sense that they're just going to, oh man, let's take our bat and ball and go home this weekend. I think they're going to show up, and I think they're going to give Wake all they want. I don't know if they'll ultimately win the series, but based on the gauntlet that Bama's run through in the SEC, I can assure you they ain't going to walk into that thing expecting to get beat down.
Well, let me ask you this, and Damien, you can chime in here. What do you reference it? Because I'm kind of with you, Greg. I don't like talking about, because I mean, we know, everybody knows from an X and O perspective, from a detail perspective, we dive into football more so than we do any other sport. We don't have the technological wherewithal of basketball, baseball, tennis, softball. So we don't talk about them that way. But I think there is a part of when you label a football team that, when you say, well, they just have it. You know, like if you wanted to go, you know, 2013 Auburn, you said, well, they were just lucky.
Yeah,
like,
just
like,
something to it. Yeah,
like
I've
said it before, and people hate this. Like, I don't believe in luck in football. Like, you make your own luck. There are different percentages of the likelihood of a certain play happening a certain way, but, I mean, blind luck in football does not exist to me. That's just not real. Like, nobody accidentally does something. You have a goal in mind, you try to accomplish it, and certain things happen certain ways more percentage of the time than they do other percentages of the time. But what do you reference it as? Because I do feel like sometimes it sounds like a slight to that team. So if you have a team that's undefeated, they're 9-0, and when nobody expected them to be there, like, well, they just got some magic with them, man.
We saw
with
TCU last year. Like, yeah, everyone was saying the exact same thing.
Right,
like, they're not actually good.
They've trailed in the fourth quarter, you know, four times. Well, like, damn, dude, it's hard to come back and win when you're down the fourth. I mean, that's not easy. So what do we label it? Is it magic? Is it just the it factor? Is it that they have something special? Like, what do you believe in it, one, and what do we actually label it as?
I don't know, because I go back and you look at, like, you brought up the 13 team, the Auburn team, like, for some reason, you know, it's a a strategy to have a punt returner back deep when it's somebody kicking a long field goal, because you can return it.
That one's not as big of a luck. Right, like the Georgia one was the lucky one. If you're going to talk about,
the like prayer,
kick six was a good play. I mean, I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, that's strategy.
I didn't like it, but I mean, it was what it was. The Georgia one, Cole, you must admit that there was some fortuitousness when it comes to that bounce.
There was good fortune. It was a low percentage, I guess, construct of how the play ended up. Yeah, for sure.
DBs had brick hands.
But the goal, Nick Marshall dropped back and threw the ball, right? The intent was for the receiver to catch it and score. That's what happened. It just didn't happen the way
it's supposed.
They drew it up. So it doesn't mean it's luck, in my opinion.
I got you.
I mean,
what you're saying.
There are sometimes the ball bounces your way, and there are sometimes the ball bounces against you. And,
oh, yeah, you want to talk about luck? Like Eli Manning catching what's his name? The helmet kick.
That's a hell of a grab.
Yeah.
David Tyree.
David Tyree. That's how you just draw it up.
Well, I mean, but that didn't require a bounce off someone's helmet and two guys, friendly firing against each other.
Like, DBs they can't catch. That's why.
Well,
I'm just saying
there is a certain level. There's a certain level of magic. Like, I don't describe it as luck. I describe it as magic. I think that's a better and a more appropriate term, because sometimes in a certain year the ball just bounces your way. It just does. I mean, 2010. Mark Ingram fumbles the ball 25 yards down the sideline, end over end down the sideline out of the back of the end zone. Like that's
doesn't happen.
Magic. Doesn't happen often.
Yeah, I mean, Mark Barron's going up to pick it off easily. He's got a torn right pec, can't raise his right arm. Like, I mean, instead it goes right over his head, and it's a touchdown Auburn. Like there are just some things that are more fortunate, and there is a certain level of magic. And Bama baseball right now has a little of that. They do. I can't really describe.
No, I mean,
why.
Think about how much more baseball we collectively have watched in the last 2 weeks, as opposed to the previous 3 months. How many times have you seen a shortstop throw it past the first baseman?
Oh,
high level college baseball.
I mean, like, maybe twice.
Maybe twice. I haven't seen another one.
And that includes the one that was a walk-off. Or the one that allowed to the lead to be going down the other day.
Absolutely. So, I mean, I think it can be a belief. I think it can be a part of your team just not giving up, just continuing to play hard. And some of it is just good fortune that goes your way. But either way.
It's definitely a belief thing, though. Like, if you believe things can happen, things happen. I don't know why that is. I do think that there is some, create your own reality. I do think there's some Murphy's Law. Like, I'm definitely, I'm weird like that. Like, if you can see it and you can believe it, like, you can do it type of guy. Like, that's a weird thing. So, like, I believe in those sorts of things. Clearly, Bama baseball believes in themselves as well. And there is an innate belief within that locker room, clubhouse, if you will. Sorry, we don't call it a locker room in baseball. Within the clubhouse, that doesn't matter what the circumstances are, everything's going to be okay, and we are going to find a way to get this done. And if you collectively think that, the magic that we've now described for the last 5 or 6 minutes seems to kind of come out of the woodwork every once in a while. You know what I mean?
Well, the wildest part about this whole conversation is the teams in which it does feel like it benefits seems to benefit them more than once. Like, it seems to be a recurring theme. And how they continue to make that happen, find ways for that to happen, that's what makes it so cool and interesting, is that it doesn't usually just – it may be because – they're not teams worth paying attention to when it happens. That team won two games. Like, who cares? They had, they had a triple reverse pass, and the team fumbled it when they were up seven, shouldn't have. And next thing you get a touchdown, tie the game, go for two, win. Like, we just didn't care because they weren't very good.
Right.
But a lot of the teams that do find ways to continue to make this a trend for themselves, it happens more times than not. And that's kind of what's cool about it, is that, man, like, how does this team continue to keep finding ways? And whether it's belief, magic, karma, good grace, good fortune, I'm not going to say the L word because I don't believe in it. I just don't. I believe in the L word when I go buy a lottery ticket and it's completely blind. I don't pick any numbers. I don't do anything, and I win. And by the way, that's never happened. That has not taken place yet. Like when I'm walking down the street and I look down and see a $20 bill, that's luck. I had no intention of finding that. I was not walking around saying, man, if I could just find a $50 bill at 20, where's a $5 bill? Oh!
Oh, 20.
10. Yes. That's luck.
Right.
Like, luck is not attempting to make something happen, and then it happens in a way that wasn't exactly the way you intended it. That's my opinion. So, we continue that conversation.
Well, you're soft.
You think so?
Yeah.
Well, I know. So,
luck is real.
Okay. You can, and
when you hit a I got one for you because you have Andrew,
the number one quarterback in the history of college football. So
I got one for you. Ever. You hit a driver golf back in your golfing days. You hit a driver 500 yards to the right. You're trying to hit the fairway. Like I want to hit the fairway. You slice a driver into the freaking redwoods, and it kicks off one of those trees and bounces right back into the fairway. Is that luck?
Golf not a sport, so I don't really know why we're
talking about it. I don't disagree with you. It's an activity. It's a hobby, if you will.
It's a game. Definitely competitive. It's a competitive game.
You're competing against blades of grass and wind, so it's not that much of like, I get it. I understand it, but help me out for a second. You're telling me that's not luck?
Sure, because it's not sports. I said I don't believe in luck in sports.
Wow. Unreal. So, what a clown show.
I don't believe in luck in clown shows either.
You should.
I do believe in Wayne's, though. This Father's Day, give your dad the gift of a beautiful, lush lawn that will be the envy of all his neighbors. Sign up for any new recurring service with Wayne's Pest Control and receive $50 off and be entered in to win one free year of lawn care from Wayne's. And they'll throw in two rounds of golf at FarmLinks for the winner. Call 866-WAYNES-1 today to get started. Mention promo code radio, and you can be entered to win. There's a lot of reasons, GMAC, to take advantage of this Father's Day deal from Wayne's.
It's just the best time to do it right now. I mean, it's the best time to do it because you can get $50 off each service that you sign up for. Plus, you get the possibility of getting one of the services for a year, and you're going to play two rounds of golf at FarmLinks. I mean, goodness gracious, what more do you want? So sign up right now. Use the offer code radio at 866-WAYNES-1. That's when you call them, 866-WAYNES-1, offer code radio. Or you can go online at callwaynes.com, offer code radio, and take advantage of this Father's Day special. Give them a shout right now and let Wayne's continue to create your happy place.
All right, continue talking luck in sports. Is it there? Is it real? And there was a quote from a former Alabama player that we want to have a discussion about next right here on McElroy and Kubelik in the morning.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing.
Congratulations.
To say. Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time. Yep. Excuse
yes,
me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.
All right, welcome back in. McElroy and Kubelik in the morning. Story of the week has been PGA Live Golf merger, DP Tour as well. And it has not slowed down. The crazy around it has really continued throughout the course of the week. James Colgan, our buddy from golf.com, going to join us to discuss it here in just a moment. But first, tell our listeners about Yellowhammer Roofing, GMAC.
Yeah, they do an amazing job. They've taken great care of me. I know they'll take great care of you as well. They're the locally owned and operated roofer that you want to deal with because every one of their guys is licensed and insured. They do an incredible job when it comes to making sure that their guys are backed up and covered. And the other thing I love too, for great peace of mind as a homeowner, I know I'm going to get it with Yellowhammer Roof. They own my roof. They're going to come out, no questions asked, for 5 years. because of that 5-year workmanship warranty. So go check them out right now for a free assessment, whether it's a roof replacement or repair. They're the team you want. 855-217-8887 or go online at yellowhammerroofing.com.
Before we bring James in from golf.com, yesterday, Jimmy Dunn, who is one of the guys on the board of the PGA Tour who helped put this deal together, had this to say in reference to being able to put a LIV PGA merger on the table with what everyone was concerned about with the victims of 9/11.
I am quite certain, and I have had conversations with a lot of very knowledgeable people, that the people I'm dealing with had nothing to do with it. And if someone can find someone that unequivocally was involved with it, I'll kill him myself. We don't have to wait around.
We'll bring in James Colgan of golf.com now. James, I don't know if that was the craziest thing around this story that you've heard this week, but feels like it's at least a candidate.
Well, to be honest with you, Cole, it's kind of hard to see which way is up right now, given the way the last couple of days have gone here. I mean, every part of this story seems to sort of challenge any conventional belief leading into Tuesday morning. So yeah, it's all been a little wild, but those comments in particular, as someone who has a very personal connection to the attacks, just as Jimmy does, that was a pretty shocking and surprising thing to hear.
It really was, and when you think about Jimmy Dunn's involvement and how he is obviously kind of taking the golf world by storm. The guy's a member at Seminole. The guy's a member. I mean, he's the president of Seminole, Augusta, Cypress, you name it. I mean, he's got it. He's got every membership that you could possibly want, as connected to the golf world as humanly possible. Why was his blessing such a big and important step when it comes to PGA and LIV ultimately merging?
So Jimmy Dunn is sort of the ultimate golf power broker. I mean, he has relationships with every major professional club, with most major professional golfers, and he's sort of staked his claim on kind of being the godfather of the sport in a lot of ways. And he was actually the original person who reached out to the head of the Saudi Public Investment Fund, Yasser Al-Rumayyan, just a couple months ago, right after the Masters. He was the one who initiated contact on behalf of the PGA Tour, and then he was part of a very small group of people, we think around 5 people, that were responsible for really hammering out the deal. So his involvement was crucial to this whole process, and it is particularly shocking because he is a partner at Piper Sandler, which is an investment bank here in New York. And Piper Sandler on September 11th lost 66 employees in the World Trade Center. He has paid for the college tuition of those employees' families. And just a year ago, he said that he wouldn't be the best person to talk about LIV's involvement in professional golf because of the resentments he still harbors about Saudi involvement in September 11th. So, I mean, his involvement in this was nothing short of astonishing, but it was also very crucial for the PGA Tour in getting this from just an idea into what is, a finalized merger between the Tour and the Public Investment Fund.
Okay, now that that's happened, James Colgan, golf.com, joining us on the Bud Light Hotline. There seems to be, there are multiple sort of ping-pong matches happening with he said, she said, this is what, that's what. The control of the Tour and what that will be now seems to be one that's arisen and that a lot of people are talking about. Sources from the PGA stepping up yesterday saying, we would never give up control. That's not a real thing. That's never going to take place. Who do you believe controls the how, the what, the why, the when, the where of these golf entities moving forward?
Well, Cole, I think it's the right question is the one that you're asking right now. The Tour, in every technical sense of the word, retains control not only over itself, but now has allegedly assumed control over LIV Golf. And, of course, the Tour already sort of had a major stake in the European Tour, which is part of this agreement as well. This news is important because the new entity that's being formed between the Tour and the Public Investment Fund will be chaired by Yasser Al-Rumayyan, who is the chief of the Public Investment Fund. And you'll hear his name used a lot in discussions around this stuff. I believe that the Tour has remained control over itself. whether the tour will have final say over, say, the existence of LIV Golf into the future is a question that remains extremely open-ended. And while the tour has assured us that, you know, they will retain control over LIV as a result of this deal, they also assured us that this was not a reality about 3 weeks ago. So it's kind of hard to take them at face value for you know, the words that are kind of coming out of their camp, particularly when we know so little about the agreement. And the only thing that we do know about the agreement is that the Saudis are the people coming in with all the money, and they are also going to be chairing the board of this new conglomerate. I mean, I think it's right to be asking questions about who is actually going to have final say. And even if that does remain with the PGA Tour, it remains to be seen kind of how strong that stranglehold actually is.
When you look at whether or not this deal will or will not go through, I mean, everyone seems to think it's probably not going to go through. I happen to think that where there's money and power, things can happen. Even as high as the Supreme Court of the United States, I feel like money and power can influence decisions. Maybe I'm just a pessimist, but we shall see. What's the likelihood at this point of this deal actually coming to fruition?
I mean, I would say based off everything that I've heard in conversations with a few, you know, mergers and acquisitions lawyers, and just generally, you know, conversations with people around the golf world, I think it is likely that this goes through. Obviously, there's the question of what the Justice Department will do, and this Justice Department has proven maybe a little bit more willing than previous administrations to sort of aggressively litigate against potential monopolies. But all of that being said, I think that based off of the conversations that I've had, the Tour and the Public Investment Fund have a tremendous, tremendous amount of lobbying power in Washington. They have a tremendous amount of money at their disposal to use to get this thing through. And ultimately, I think one of the big things here is that, you know, in past Justice Department decisions involving sort of antitrust cases and monopolies, one of the big things that has kind of been discussed is the lack of competition in the space, is that harming consumers? It's sort of hard to say that it is harming consumers because professional golfers make up such a small percentage of the U.S. population. So I could see that being sort of a key development in the fact that, you know, the Justice Department may or may not decide to kind of pursue breaking up this merger pretty aggressively.
James Colgan, golf.com, joining us on the Bud Light Hotline. We were sharing the quotes live on the show earlier this week, and then went back and shared some of the audio afterwards when we were able to retrieve it while it was happening real time. You wrote an article about Rory McIlroy, kind of what happened to him with the press conference earlier this week, his reaction to some certain things, basically about how he risked everything for the PGA Tour, got played anyway. What's next for Rory? And where do you think he is right now as far as his own future and where all of golf is heading?
Well, I think he's ticked off right now, and I think, honestly, fairly justifiably so. I think, you know, he said in his press conference he was dreading talking to the media about this situation, and he felt like the tour had hung him out to dry with the way that they, you know, kind of put him up to be their spokesperson and then turned their back on him the second that it was, you know, very convenient to do so. I think he's upset, and I think pretty justifiably he's upset. But as for where he's going, I don't think he has much of a choice. So long as he wants to continue being a professional golfer, he's going to have to play on one of the major tours. And right now, all of the major tours are looking as though in a matter of a few weeks, they'll be merged together with the Public Investment Fund. So he has said that he doesn't have any true moral objection to the Saudi funding. I think his big thing all along has been, you know, that he encourages the golf world to be careful about the way that the Saudi money is coming into the sport. And in theory, this agreement should do exactly that. So I don't think he has a huge moral objection to the agreement on those grounds, but he has a huge, huge moral objection to the existence of LIV Golf. He said in his presser the other day, "I hate LIV Golf." That was a direct quote. And, you know, the decisions of the PGA Tour now are going to influence whether LIV has a future and what that future looks like. you'd have to think that Rory's going to be kind of getting himself involved in what that is and what it looks like. And I think he also, you know, could be basing some of his future decisions about where he's going to play, how much he's going to play, when he's going to play, you know, what role he's going to take on for the tour based off of the way that they handle the next few months.
James, great stuff, man. Thanks for the time. This ongoing story just continues to get more and more wild when we never thought that that was even feasible. I look forward to having you back again soon. Have a great weekend.
Thanks so much, guys. Talk to you very soon.
James Colgan of Golf.com joining us there on the Bud Light Hotline. And they're just pieces and parts of the story. By the way, you can follow James on Twitter at James Colgan, C-O-L-G-A-N-2-6. And keep up with everything he's going to do there. It's just it continues to become more and more wild as things heat up with some of those guys on tour that want answers and now essentially asking to be made right in certain press conferences. Things are heating up here in Alabama as well. You know that heat and humidity can be brutal. Don't let it affect your home and family. Keep them comfortable with an affordable Trane cooling system. Trane is our official partner here at Jocks. They've been recognized as America's most trusted brand 9 consecutive years. Make sure you have a Trane system you can rely on. Find a comfort specialist near you at Trane.com. And remember, it's hard to stop a Trane. I have one question about that. And as far as the actual LIV tour, does it continue to do that? LIV, we'll discuss it next on McElroy and Kubelik in the morning.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.
All right, welcome back in. McElroy and Kubelik in the morning, 8:50, Friday, June 9th, right here on Jocks 94.5 as we keep moving into the weekend.
Move along with our friends at Crocker Moving Services. They're a local company owned by an Iraq War veteran, Eric Crocker. Crocker believes in hiring movers you can trust to complete full background checks and run drug tests with every single employee. These are good guys, and you can trust them in your home. Whether you need your whole home packed up and move, your company headquarters moves across country, or you just want them to come rearrange your living room, these guys got you covered. They also do deliveries for furniture that you purchase and need to get to your home. So call or visit them online today for a free quote. The website's CrockerMovingServices.com. That's CrockerMovingServices.com. Support your veterans by choosing Crocker Moving Services for your next move.
All right, so I just want to stay on this LIV Golf PGA Tour merger and some of the things around it. Great conversation there with James about a couple other things that are happening. And there are multiple golfers that are now saying, hey, we want to be made right as far as the money that we did not take to leave the PGA Tour. Greg Norman, by the way, is rallying the troops over at LIV, GMAC, saying, quote, LIV is a standalone entity and will continue to be that moving forward. And that comes right from the top. I guess the first question that I have is,
what's the point?
Why? Why do we need this? Why do we want this? I don't know really what comfort level that would give, you know, the guys who were involved. Maybe you continue to get your money, or you could, if you want the extra money, you can come play over here. I don't know. I find it odd that he wanted to go out of his way to sort of hammer that point home that,
right,
you know, LIV Golf is going to continue.
I think it's ridiculous. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, his job depends on LIV Golf's existence. So I have to consider the source a little bit. But at the same time, man, what is the point? I mean, explain to me this. You now have done what you wanted to do. You infiltrated the system. You now have a place at the table. Just like when your boy in the program, Latimer, got a place at the table. Yeah.
Yep.
That's Yasir. That's him. He just headbutted the car window and now he's in. You know, he's got a place at the table. So that's all he wanted in this whole deal, at least it seems like. He's not making any money on LIV. Like, just put your money towards the PGA Tour and let's go about it the way it's always been done. So I'm not sure what the point is by them trying to defend their turf and dig in by saying, yeah, this is a completely separate entity. I'm not buying it.
Yasir Al-Rahmanian was referenced in this story, GMAC, as the most powerful person in the world who is not a head of state.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, he can disrupt economies. He can change the face of corporations. I mean, he's proven that.
Sounds pretty powerful.
Unfortunately, $650
billion war chest. You got some ammunition.
No, that helps. I mean, yeah, you can definitely influence the world. There's no doubt. But I would say that someone with a social media backing might have a little bit more say, especially with how people are influenced and, frankly, how dumb people are. I think that, you know, that's probably the person with the most.
The other part
he's
of
in
this,
the mix though.
The other part too is like now the PGA Tour is coming out and they're trying to puff their chest out saying, no, we would never give up control. No, we would never allow someone else to come in and be able to dictate what we're going to do. Is it? Nobody believes that.
No, come on.
I understand that maybe you want to try to save a little bit of face, but no one's buying that.
Yeah.
No one thinks that's a real thing.
0%. Come on. Come on. What are we doing?
So if you had to lay it out right now, where does this go? How does this look in the next, I don't know, 5-10 years?
Everybody comes under one umbrella, and that's the PGA Tour. Whether they rename it is to be determined, but I think that everyone's going to play on. There's going to be one world tour, and it goes like Formula One. You want exactly what it's going to be like Formula One, but with golf. That's how I envision it.
Okay. I envision feeling better after I visit your CBD store because they have products for arthritis and anxiety, not just for you, but also your pet. Better night's sleep, they can help you with that. More focus throughout the course of the day, they can help you with that as well. Even weight loss, you can explore an all-natural approach to weight loss with the Trim by SunMed. That's in stock at your CBD store now. Check out one of the four locations, Highway 280 by Bailey Brothers, 150 by the Cajun Cleaver, Trustful just off 459 and now downtown, and Five Points, your CBD store, where good health hits home. Kirk Bowles talks Texas next.
Former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show. Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville? Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Let's see. Good for my career. Send me to rehab, though. So that's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.